Hello, and welcome to the Kara Podcast, Knowledge Base Live. I'm your host, Connor Lee, and this episode is less of an introduction into your associations as it is an informative update. So, to help me answer some of my questions, we have not one, but two guests today. So, with me, I have the 2022 Chair of the Board, Larissa Callan, here with me to help deliver some statistics and to share her opinion on the future. And later, we'll be having none other than the Executive Officer of Kara himself, Larry Westergaard. But for now, hey, Larissa, how are you?
I'm doing well, and you?
I'm not too bad. So, I wanted to ask about a couple of predictions that we kind of talked about before. The last time we were in here, you mentioned that, jumping onto some statistics, we predicted a lot more sales happening in 2022, but we are also seeing a shortage in inventory for these listings as well. Do you believe that the sales of these will drop in price and quantity to match the lowering inventory, or do you believe that they're going to continue to stay high and possibly even stagnant into the coming months?
I think over the next few months, with the inventory shortages, I think we'll actually see prices continue to rise.
So even though there's a lowering inventory, you think that they're going to go up?
Yeah, typically when you, with supply and demand, you know, the more demand you have and the less supply, you see those price increases, right?
That's pretty fair. Would you say that the demographic of that is usually a little bit older, or would you say that it's pretty even in terms of older or younger buyers?
In my market area right now, it is pretty even.
It is pretty even?
Yeah.
Would you say that younger generations are still kind of able to compete in this kind of market, or would you say it is kind of leaning a little bit more to the older generation in that regard?
No, I actually think that they are able to compete. I guess the biggest thing that we've seen is a big change in the bulk of the first-time buyers are actually getting gifted down payments. There was a stat out there that 30% of the down payments last year was gifted money. So you're seeing transfer of wealth happening, right? Which is enabling these first-time buyers to still compete and be a part of the market.
And even though they are competing, though, you mentioned that they were getting gifted money for those as well. So kind of following up with that, do you believe that due to the market showing less inventory, potentially buyers getting gifted down payments, that detached homes, even semi-detached, are almost becoming a thing of the past or more of a luxurious purchase? And we're kind of more moving towards the condo slash apartment style of living?
Depending on your area and location, I think that that is a trend that we will see coming. I know that the Calgary downtown core is even looking at changing a lot of their old commercial buildings into that style of living to enable first-time home buyers to get in. Our smaller communities, the development's just not there. So I think we'll continue to see people still looking for that type of home and maybe even having to pay more for them.
And there you have it. Well, thank you for your insight there, Larissa. And tapping out of my guest speakers, right now I have the legendary executive officer of Kara himself, Larry Westergaard.
Thanks, Connor.
I wanted to start by just saying thank you for coming, but also I know that there's going to be a bit of confusion here involving some of the rule changes, so I figured who better to ask than you. So we're getting a lot of confusion and phone calls and emails that we've been receiving regarding home inspections and permissions. So can you kind of just walk me through if there's been any changes to this policy recently or what the general process is?
Sure. So there hasn't been any changes for a while on this. Effectively, everything stems from what the seller's permission is. So you're right, we have been having some inspectors call asking about the form and their responsibility for getting the form filled out. And my response to them is that form is the responsibility of the listing agent to get permission from their sellers where they're acknowledging the unaccompanied visit by the home inspection company and specifically who else might be accompanying them into the property. And this is within the rules, is that it's the seller's home that if a realtor, either the seller's agent or the buyer's agent, isn't going to be present during the visit, regardless of the fact that we might contract with the inspector to have a key, the seller must give permission for that unlicensed individual to be entering into the property.
So as long as they get their permission, they're okay?
Absolutely. So again, the listing agent needs to have that conversation with their client, the seller, to obtain that permission. Now, we provide a form which they can use, or if their brokerage has a specific form that they would rather they use for their own internal policies, that's fine. As long as it's been done, then the process just proceeds from there.
Perfect. So just make sure that you have that conversation with your clients beforehand, and then you should be all good.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the information, Larry. That definitely clears that up. Moving on into another common question we receive. Marking a listing pending is now required under the new rule amendment in January, but members are expressing some concern of not being able to show their clients pending and active listings with a time clause. Is there a solution at the moment?
So everything that a client would see as being an active listing is only what the public is seeing. So for instance, if they were going on to MLS.ca or another listing website, you know, perhaps a brokerage or a franchise one, they're not going to be able to tell the difference. And that's one of the advantages of using a realtor, is that the realtor is going to have that more up-to-date current information showing what's pending and what's active. So as a realtor, you're always going to know what's going to be available. When you are setting up searches for your client, for instance, then you're going to have to do a little bit more work, honestly, to make sure that you're covering the full breadth of the market. So, you know, you're going to have to do a search that shows active listings that meet that parameter, and then you're going to most likely have to do another search that shows the same parameters, but doing it with pending with a time clause or all pendings. There's just no workaround at this time, so there is going to be a little bit of more work that needs to be done.
So what you're saying is, instead of having one all-encompassing search, I'm going to just have to have two now instead?
Well, yeah. So think about when you're setting up the search, if you're starting with a new client. So let's say I'm meeting you for the first time and you're looking in a specific area for some listings.
Right.
So prior to January, you would have set up a search, you would have put all your criteria in, and you would have most likely just selected all active properties, and that would have spewed out a report that would have been emailed to you that would have showed all properties that met that criteria, and you wouldn't know, or I wouldn't know, which ones were active and which ones were pending. It would just all show everything regardless.
Okay.
So now what's going to have to happen is I'm going to have to do that same work, so I'm going to set up that same search, but when I send you the first results, everything that's showing is active should be active. But what I need to do in order to make sure that I'm giving you the full breadth of the market is I'm going to have to copy that criteria into a second search and then just select pending with time clause and then send you that as well. So that's, you know, what, maybe another 3 or 4 minutes of work in order to set up that second search for you. But then moving forward, there's really not a lot of work I'm going to have to do, because anything that might then move forward that was active before and all of a sudden generates an offer that has a time clause will be captured in that second search. Or if it's just a property that goes pending, you would have already seen it when I showed you all the active properties. You would have already made a decision whether or not you wanted to look at that property or not. So we've already captured those, you know, on a go-forward basis. You would have already been exposed to that property and seen it. So there's not a lot of extra work that needs to be done there.
And actually, thinking about it, the more that you're explaining it, it actually makes it better. You're actually providing a better scope of what is available to your client at that point as well.
Yeah, you know, one of the important things on a go-forward basis as a realtor is to have that conversation with your buyer clients so that you know exactly what they want to see and what types of properties they want to be exposed to. So I can have that conversation with you right at the beginning saying, hey, look, while we're doing this, properties are going to accept an offer and they're going to go pending. This is what pending means. Sometimes they're going to go pending and they're going to have a time clause on, you know, it might be subject to the sale of another property. So that's going to happen too. Do you want me to keep you informed about those properties? Because we still might be able to capture that in an offer or not. So here's the pros, here's the cons. How do you want me to proceed? It's just a more fulsome conversation that you have to have with the buyer right at the beginning of your interview with them.
And that makes more sense. That should hopefully avoid some confusion with those then.
Yeah, and just to keep in mind that if you're representing a seller, any property that has an offer on it, regardless if it's pending, a time clause or not, continues to be marketed as active to generate exposure for the seller up until the time that all conditions come off and it's sold. So you're fulfilling your obligations automatically with your seller clients until they know whether or not that they're successful in selling their home.
So just to clarify with that as well, by that you mean that even though it's marked pending in MLS, for example, to the public, if I look up that listing, it's still showing as active?
To the public, there's no difference. It's always showing as active on the website.
Perfect. So then, yeah, you don't even have to worry about potentially people seeing the wrong listing or seeing a listing after it's been marked pending. It's already been exposed to them. So that's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that as well. I guess kind of moving on to the last piece of confusion that we have from some members here. What is the protocol regarding posting an MLS listing after an offer has been accepted? Has there been a problem with that, or is this a problem?
You know, it's one of those good news, bad news type of situations. The good news is that the market is such that our members are having trouble keeping their listings before an offer comes in. The bad news is you might be creating a representative capacity issue. Let me expand on that. So you're selling your home and it's a Thursday evening.
Right.
And we're going to sit down, we're going to talk about listing your home, and you make the decision that you want me to represent you, but you want to take the weekend to clean the house up a little bit, maybe paint a room or something. And I say, not a problem. You take the weekend, you do all those things, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. On Monday, I'll post that to MLS and we'll get going forward. But I don't want to take up a lot of your time in the interim, so I want you to focus on doing that. So let's sign all the documents tonight and we'll sign the contract today, but we'll make it effective on Monday. So you don't have to be bothered with me coming back over to bother you again on the weekend. Just know that on Monday, I'm going to post your listing to MLS.
Okay, so as long as you have that discussion beforehand.
But here's the thing. So let's hypothetically say that on Friday, I go back to the office and I happen to be talking to somebody in the office about this great listing that I've got coming on Monday. And they say, oh, I've got a buyer for them. You know, that sounds exactly like the property that my buyer is looking for. Do you mind if we go take a look at it on Saturday? So I call you and I explain the situation and you hem and haw, but you let the buyer come in and the buyer's agent come in and look at the house on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And they decide that they really like it. So they give me an offer to present to you. So I present that offer to you on Saturday and you accept it. And now all of a sudden that property is pending. So here's where the issue might come up and you need to think about it as the listing agent. You might want to talk to your broker about the best way to handle it because your contract is effective on Monday. So what's your representative capacity and how are you able to act for the seller in that 3-day period between Thursday when I sign the contract and Monday when the effective date of the contract comes by? And then the second thing from an association point of view is, what about the MLS? So you've explained MLS and the benefits of MLS to the seller, but now you're accepting an offer and you're not exposing it to MLS. Have you had a discussion with the seller that talks about the pros and cons about not exposing it to MLS and the potential for other buyers looking at the property and perhaps generating a higher offer? So, you know, is that now an MLS contract, or do you need to address that as well? So those are some of the things that you just need to be aware of and talk to your broker about the best way to deal with it.
So yeah, in that regard, I would recommend to have the conversation with your broker and then also have that conversation with your client beforehand and let them know right away if it's going to be put up or not, or let them know about specific offers and everything like that beforehand.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's having the discussion with the seller, making sure that they are giving you informed consent, they understand the pros and cons, and that you move forward from then. There's nothing wrong with not posting it to MLS. You just might need to change the contractual obligations that you have in order to best represent that seller.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that information here, Larry. I think that definitely clears a lot of things up. We appreciate your time and expertise and words. As we continue to move forward into a brighter 2022, thank you for coming. And for everyone else listening, remember to stay safe, keep calm, and care on.